Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival. Visit catskill-cuisine.com to learn more and buy tickets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
I think that you cannot move forward if you don't understand what the thing is with Black food, but why it was created the way it was. I think it's difficult to move forward unless you honor that legacy.
It was a very humbling moment for me to realize how Polish or how Eastern European, how Slavic in some ways my family was, and that I just always assumed these things were uniquely Jewish because in New York, the pickle became Jewish, but everyone in Eastern Europe is making pickles.
I think in making something new, creating something new, that in and of itself is the honoring. That's the sacredness of it.
This is the food that's worth the work and worth the wait.
When you hear the word identity, what comes to mind? Gender, race, culture? Our capital S self is largely informed by a charcuterie of ideas. And the food we eat is a reflection of that. The voices you heard at the top of our episode were Deb Freeman, Jeffrey Yoskovitz, and H. Conley. All of these folks previously heard on the Meat and Three airwaves mused on the same question. How are food and identity interlinked? Whether it's what we eat, who we eat with, the places we shop, our choices surrounding food are directed by who we think we are. Today, we're pulling from the Meat and Three archives to explore how food shapes us, and just as importantly, how we shape our food. Without further ado, I'm Taylor Early, and this is Meat and Three on HRN.
Meat and Three.
Meat and Three.
Meat and Three.
One meat, three sides.
Food, news, and storytelling.
A square meal for your ears.
Meat and Three.
Choosing where to buy groceries may seem like a decision driven by our free will. But not all of our shopping choices are truly our own. At least, not entirely. For our first story, Elizabeth Fisher uncovers a favorite Meat and Three story that questions why we shop, where we shop, and at what cost.
Our choices around what foods we eat and where we buy them are fueled by the many intersections of our identities, from race and class to cultural upbringing and gender. The American supermarket has become a space where consumers cultivate their sense of self through choice. In episode 158 of Meat and Three, Are You in a Food Cult?, Sophie Talkov-Burko speaks with Benjamin Lohr, the author of The Secret Life of Groceries, The Dark Miracle of the American Supermarket, illuminating the darker shadows of our cultish fanfare towards America's grocery stores.
We all have our grocery store preferences, but how did they become a part of our communal and personal identities? What does our obsession with grocery stores reveal about American society?
You know, a lot of our identity is wrapped up in the choices that we make. Food is this, the kind of perfect vehicle for our consumptive choices.
But in an age when we are marketed to based on the identities we were born with and wish to cultivate, our shopping choices and loyalty to brands are often not conclusions we come to on our own. From where we shop to what products we buy, there's a clever marketing scheme vying for our attention and dollar. Take the origins of Trader Joe's, for example.
At a certain point, it definitely became Joe's intention to create a cult-like following. I don't think he would have framed it as a cult, so to speak, but he was extremely aware of the demographics of a Trader Joe's consumer. The first Trader Joe's opens in Pasadena. Joe chose that location after driving around, counting like the number of boats in people's front yards, the different types of cars that they would have. Just looking for any signifiers of like the kind of consumer that he wanted.
Beyond steering shoppers' decision-making, grocery stores' elaborate displays and expertly organized aisles hide the truths that make their very existence possible, like low wages and corrupt supply chains.
I do think that grocery store can be thought of as like a metaphor for American hegemony and American power overseas, and the way we've outsourced things and the way we task other people to supply this like vision of abundance for us.
When attempting to eat in a way that aligns with my values, listening to this Meat and Three story initially brought on feelings of helplessness, especially when counting on grocery store products to make most of my meals. Benjamin and Sophie promote empowering workers, strengthening unions, and advocating that grocery stores live up to collective ideals. But what else can we, as consumers, do? I begin to ask if my food choices are really my own. Are they autonomous or influenced? If so, how? What brands am I supporting, and why? Exploring these questions critically has done far more to shape my identity than what product I reach for at checkout or what grocery store tote I carry on my shoulder.
In the face of large corporate interests dominating so many of our grocery stores, it's easy to dismiss the power of our own choices. However, when tasked with continuing a tradition, like soul food, the choices we make as individuals can have a massive impact. Although Black history ought to be celebrated all year round, Black History Month was initially Negro History Week, created in 1925 by Dr. Carter G. Woodson. Today, Black History Month reflects on individuals who have made notable contributions in the fight for equity and freedom. Freedom fighters didn't just sustain themselves on the struggle, though. They needed sustenance that fed the body and nourished the soul. Here's Asha McElroy on how soul food was cultivated in the fight for freedom.
Black history is rooted within the African diaspora because many of our ancestors were born in Africa, the motherland. They were forcefully taken to the Americas and dispersed throughout the Caribbean. To center themselves in an unfamiliar land, they continued to keep the diaspora alive by honoring various Ndinkra symbols. The Sankofa symbol depicts a bird with its neck and beak facing backward and its body pressing toward the future. The symbol stands for reaching back as we move forward. I thought of the Sankofa symbol when I heard this Meat in Three story, honoring the past to build the future. I love that this episode didn't come out during Black History Month. It goes to show how important it is to keep uplifting and celebrating Black history all year round.
Dynamic food writer Deb Freeman discusses the evolution of African-American foodways and their impact on one's food culture. The future of soul food involves incorporating culturally relevant elements, including tomatoes, okra, and ancient grains such as fonio, all ingredients intertwined throughout the African diaspora.
For me, when I think about the future of soul food, I think about, you know, using elements from our background and from our heritage, but then how can we do it in new and unexpected ways? Not to say that there's anything wrong with the staples that we all know and love. Of course, though, that's comfort food and that has its place.
Mac and cheese, collard greens, and cornbread typically have a place at the table, whether on New Year's Day, Juneteenth, or even Thanksgiving. These staples will undoubtedly make your mouth water. When I think about soul food, I have a different perspective because I am a vegetarian, meaning that I do not consume any animal products besides dairy occasionally. I create traditional soul food items like stir-fried collard greens, spiced with cumin, berberay, smoked paprika, and other aromatics instead of ham hocks. I don't shame other people for their food choices, but I recognize that we must come together to define innovative and interesting values in the continuous fight to preserve African-American foodways for future generations. Freeman provides a framework of the values that she uses as her North Star in the fight for preservation.
we're able to take traditions from Africa and keep our legacy alive. And so while so many things were stripped from us and taken from us, 400 years later, we are still able to hold on to some of that cultural memory. And that's because of every single person who, whether it be a technique or by using similar ingredients, they were able to keep our traditions alive. And to that, we owe them a debt of gratitude.
We must continue to say the names of our ancestors who made significant contributions to African-American foodways for future generations to come. It is our responsibility to not only preserve Black history, but continue to shape the future of the food system by recreating culturally relevant, soulful meals.
We'll be right back with more Meat and Three after a brief break.
Gather your friends and family at the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival, presented by the Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, and Resorts World Catskills. Mark your calendars for a flavor-packed weekend from May 10th to May 12th. Experience the fusion of phenomenal food and electrifying entertainment. Rub shoulders with your favorite Food Network personalities, including Andrew Zimmern, Michael Simon, Scott Conant, Marcus Samuelson, Jeffrey Zakarian, Anne Burrell, Melba Wilson, and distinguished international chefs by LaBelle Farms. Kick off the festivities with Friday's star-studded golf tournament and evening reception. Saturday heats up with free tastings, thrilling live demos, music, and family activities, culminating with a gourmet dinner hosted by celebrity chefs. And on Sunday, celebrate Mother's Day with a special celebrity-curated brunch. Tickets for this celebration are selling like hotcakes. Visit Catskill-Cuisine.com to grab your pass for this unforgettable weekend in the picturesque Catskills. See you there!
Welcome back to Meat and Three. Food nostalgia takes on many forms. For some, it may be the smell of cookies baking in the oven, or the taste of a soul-warming soup that's been stewed for hours. No matter the trigger, it often signals a tie to family, culture, and community. Up next, Danielle Flitter reflects on her own childhood memories from the deli to her grandmother's table.
For me, the Jewish deli classics of kasha and bow ties with gravy, chopped liver on rye bread, and definitely white fish salad with a thick smear of cream cheese on a toasted sesame bagel are formative dishes from my childhood. They remind me of my culture and memories with my family.
Ashkenazi Jewish food is the core of everything. The practice of Jewish life is through the meals and through the food.
That's Jeffrey Yaskowitz, food entrepreneur and Jewish food expert from season 12's episode, Food and Religion. This story transported me back to my grandparents' table. On nights that my mom didn't feel like cooking, she served us deli, as she called it.
The deli used to be known as the secular synagogue. And it was, and for me, a good deli, the food needs to be good, but the atmosphere needs to be good. The hosts need to make you feel welcome. You want to feel like you're eating in community, even if it doesn't have to be a Jewish community.
My mom's deli filled the table with stacks of fresh rye bread, plates of assorted meats with anything from pastrami, corned beef, roast beef, turkey, maybe even ham, and cheeses, always Swiss and Cooper Sharp, condiments of Hellman's mayonnaise, Russian dressing, and a bottle of golden spicy brown mustard, all alongside crispy kosher dill pickles, coleslaw, potato salad, and a bag of Wise potato chips, creating a full spread. And for dessert, always something homemade, likely a marble or pound cake. Everyone gathered around the table, passing the plates of meats and cheeses, fixing their own sandwich to their liking, laughing and sharing stories. This is community. Sharing meals like this brings together family and friends and fosters a deep sense of belonging. So maybe nostalgia is the bite of food itself, or maybe it's where that bite takes us in our memories that makes it so special.
Some days, we cook because we love it. Some days, we're cooking to connect to our heritage, creativity, or environment. Other days, we cook simply because we have to eat. For our last story, Sophia Hooper revisits a story our producer H. Conley made back in 2019 when they were an HR and intern. Together, they explore the tension between how we want to feel about our kitchens and how we actually do.
Many of us at HRN think about food all day long. If our day jobs aren't related to food, our second job, side hustle, or hobby surely is. Food, whether cooking it, growing it, serving it, or writing about it, is central to how we imagine ourselves and what we offer to our communities. But right now, I work in food service in a seasonal town on Cape Cod. Between the uninspiring food at my day job, the gray days of early spring, and near constant immersion in food news, I just don't feel hungry the way I sometimes do.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, are there specific foods that you're like, I do this because it brings me joy?
That's Meat and Three producer H. Conley. We were discussing a piece they made back in 2019 about the cooking we do simply for the joy of it. And I did not have a good answer for them.
I am like really in my flop era when it comes to cooking because I'm living with my parents.
Oh God, the biggest handicap to good cooking is living at home.
I used to have a refrigerator full of homemade pasta sauce, compound butter, infused syrups, and pickled anything. But before sitting down to make this story, I couldn't remember the last time I'd made any of my favorite recipes. When I first listened to the story you're about to hear, I was enchanted. I've never made cheese, but I was grabbed by H's ability to share their joy in cooking with me, even at a time when I hardly want to reheat leftovers for myself. Here's H on ricotta.
I fill my grandma's old soup pot with raw milk from work, cream, and salt, and bring it to a low simmer while occasionally stirring. Add some white vinegar and watch it separate. Once the curds have solidified, I pour them into a strainer with cheesecloth laid over it and a yogurt container underneath to catch the whey. I add a little salt and taste it before tying the cheesecloth to the faucet to drain. At that point, it is light and fluffy and so sweet that it's almost a mousse. I never drain it much more than an hour because I have zero patience. It's still warm and creamy and irresistible. That's what all the effort is for. Even now, I'm perpetually awed by the chemistry of cheese making. That these processes have existed for so long, that there are so many different things that milk has to offer, and that I have the ability to create them.
I really miss the excitement of going to the fancy grocery store for one special ingredient, taking creative liberties with a recipe only to ruin it, and then taking even more creative liberties to fix it, making something better only by doing it a dozen times. I miss it, and as of recording, I still rely heavily on leftovers and cereal, but I'm grateful to those who remind me why I love food so much, what is so special about the thing I've dedicated years of my life to, and what is worth coming back to the kitchen for.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. Learn more about the guests and topics we touched on this week by checking out our show notes. This episode of Meat and Three was reported by Elizabeth Fisher, Asha McElroy, Daniel Flitter, and Sophia Hooper. Our lead producer on this episode was Sam Girardi, with support from Addison Austin Liu. Meat and Three is produced by H. Conley and me, Taylor Early. Our audio engineer for this episode is Armin Spengen. Our theme song was composed by Breakmaster Cylinder. This program is supported in part by public funds from the New York City Department of Cultural Affairs in partnership with the City Council. Meat and Three is powered by Simplecast. Meat and Three is a production of Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org and follow us at heritage_radio. And please stay in touch. Whether you have a story idea or would just like to say hey, write us at ideas@meatandthree.nyc. That's all spelled out.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.